Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, I'm Natalia Shpilova-Saita. I'm a host of New Books in Ukrainian Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm delighted to speak today with Emilia Glaser and Yulia Ilchuk about Halina Kruk's book, A Crash Course in Molotov Cocktails, published by Arrowsmith this spring. Emilia Glaser translates primarily from Yiddish, Ukrainian, and Russian. She's professor of literature at UC San Diego, where she holds the chair of Judaic Studies. She's the author of Jews and Ukrainians in Russia's Literary Borderlands and Songs in Dark Times, Yiddish Poetry of Struggle from Scottsboro to Palestine. She's the editor of Stories of Khmelnytsky, Literary Legacies of the 1648 Ukrainian Cossack Uprising, and with Stephen Lee, Comintern Aesthetics. She's currently writing a book about contemporary Ukrainian poetry. Yulia Ilchuk is assistant professor of Slavic literature and culture at Stanford University. She's the author of an award-winning book, Nikolai Gogol's Hybrid Performance, published at University of Toronto Press in 2021, and a translator of contemporary Ukrainian poetry. Yulia Ilchuk's most recent book project, The Vanished, Memory, Temporality, Identity in Post-Euromaidan Ukraine, revisits collective memory and trauma, post-memory, remembrance, memorials, and reconciliation in Ukraine. Hello, Emilia and Yulia, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So Halina Kruk is one of the most prominent poets and writers in Ukraine today. She's the author of 5 books of poetry, a collection of short stories, and 4 children's books. She also received multiple awards for her writing, including the Privitanie, Життя, and Ранослов prizes in 1997, the Step-by-Step Prize for Children's Books in 2003, the Book Forum Best Book Award in 2021, the Smolenskij Poetry Award, the Bohdan Ihor Antonich Prize Award, the Ranoslov Award, and the Kovalev Foundation Prize for Prose in 2022. Would you briefly talk about how you started working with Halina Kruk?
It was quite an accident because we collaborated with Emilia on translating other well-known writers, Sergei Jadan and Boris Khersonsky. And then, with the beginning of the war, we discovered that Halina's poetry, and especially I was surprised that she's a literary writer because I've known her only as a scholar of medieval Baroque literature. So that was quite a discovery for me to see her moving from syllabatonic traditional Ukrainian verse, like very beautiful, intimate lyrical tradition, to more verliber and contemporary and very emotional style of writing in the recent couple years.
And I would just add that Yulia and I, we'd been translating together for a few years when we started to translate Halina's work. And we started translating her work, I think, around 2021. Mm-hmm. So it was before the full-scale invasion, but we were already looking at some of the work that she was writing about the ongoing war. So we came to her work about war, but also realized that she had this beautiful poetry that she'd been writing since the 90s when she was still you know, a late teenager in her early 20s. So she really has this side career as a very accomplished poet in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. So would you comment on the title of the book, A Crash Course in Molotov Cocktails? This is quite a provocative title.
It's a line from one of the poems. Mm-hmm. And this is the poem called No War that we titled No War. It's about standing. It's about a Russian poet who's standing holding a no war sign. And then the poem goes on to talk about what it means to actually be in Ukraine after the full scale invasion. She wrote it very, very shortly after the invasion in 2022. And she talks about people who have maybe taken a crash course in Molotov cocktails. One of our designer actually from Aerosmith Press was just flipping through the book and came up with the idea of the title, and we all really liked it because of how provocative it was. Helena was a little bit worried because she said, "Won't this trigger algorithms that might think that it's about weapons?" And I was like, "Oh no, nothing to worry about." Of course, it did. Very briefly, she was right. It triggered an algorithm that kept it off of Amazon for about a week, but that's all been sorted out.
It's
up and it's fine. So yeah, there are other books with Molotov cocktails in the title that are about poetry and so forth. So it's not it's not crazy to use a title that might involve weapons.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know about that.
I want to just add that the original line says that all family participates in making deadly cocktails, and we kind of unpacked what it means, because she uses euphemism in the original poem.
Shall we read the poem, actually? No war. You're standing with a no war sign as if to redeem the inevitable. This war can't be stopped. Like bright arterial blood from an open wound, it flows till it kills. It enters our cities with the armed men, seeps into our courtyards with the reconnaissance units, like the deadly mercury beads you can't pick up. You can't fix this except to find and neutralize it. These civilian managers, clerks, IT guys, and students, life didn't prepare them for street fights, but the war did. On the front line, a landscape so familiar it hurts, in a hurry. At first, they only recruit experienced combat fighters to the defense units. After that, gamers who play Dune and Fallout and had a crash course in Molotov cocktails from a bartender at the local club while the kids slept. The kids were crying. The kids were being born into a world temporarily unfit for all this. Out on the playground, they're assembling Czech hedgehogs, and nuclear families mix deadly drinks. Whole families finally enjoying a conversation and a collective project. War shortens the distance from person to person, from birth to death, from what we never wished for to what it turned out we were capable of. Mom, pick up the phone. A woman's been pleading for 2 hours in the apartment building basement. Stubborn and dense, she won't stop believing in a miracle, but her mother is out of cell phone range in the suburbs where the prefab collapsed like cheap Legos from the massive strikes where just yesterday broadcast towers stopped connecting people, where the world got blown up into pre- and post-war along the uneven folds of the no-war sign, which you'll toss in the nearest trash can on your way home from the protest, Russian poet. War kills with the hands of the indifferent and even the hands of idle sympathizers. So there's both Molotov cocktails and deadly drinks in here. It's kind of a landscape, a portrait of what it means to mobilize for war and how little even well-meaning protesters outside the country can see that and feel that.
Yulia, would you like to read a Ukrainian version of this poem?
Sure. Прошу плакати комнову, як індульгенцію за те, чого вже не відвернути, війну не зупинити, як яскраву артеріальну кров із відкритої рани. Вона тече, доки не вб'є. Заходять у наші міста озброєними людьми, розсипаються ворожими ДРГ у внутрішніх дворах. Ніби смертельні ртутні кульки, що їх уже не визбирати, не повернути назад, хіба що вистежувати, знешкоджувати цим цивільним менеджерам, клеркам, айтішникам і студентам, яких життя не готувало до вуличних боїв, але війна вчить в польових умовах, на доболі знайомі місцевості. Наспіх в тероборону спершу беруть чоловіків з бойовим досвідом, потім уже навіть тих, що мають за плечима тільки Дюн і Fallout. лише короткий майстер-клас із приготування вибухових коктейлів від знайомого бармена. В найближчому нічному клубі сплять діти, плачуть діти, народжуються діти. У світі тимчасово непридатне для цього. У дворі на дитячому майданчику варять протитанкові жаки і розливають смертельні напої. Сімейним підрядом, цілими родинами, які нарешті спізнали радість спілкування і злагодженої колективної праці. Війна скорочує відстань від людини до людини, від народження до смерті. Від того, чому ми собі не бажали, до того, на що ми виявилися здатні. «Мамо, візьми трубку», – другу годину просить жінка у підвалі багатоповерхівки. Вперто і глухо, не припиняючи вірити в чудо. Але мама її поза зоною досяжності, у тому передмісті, де панельки склалися, як дешевий конструктор, від масованих ударів, де вежі зв'язку ще вчора перестали зв'язувати, де світ розірвався на до війни і після. Вздовж нерівного загину плакатика нового, який ти викинеш у найближчий смітник, ідучи з протестів додому, російський поети. Війна убиває руками байдужих і навіть руками бездіяльних співчутливих.
Thank you.
If I could say something really quickly about this poem, there's a difficult word in the first line, this jak indulgencja zate. And our first instinct in this translation was to say, as if you're indulging the inevitable, talking about this idea of standing there with an indulgence. And a colleague of ours heard us give a very early reading of this poem when we just translated it, Sasha Sidorovich up in the University of Washington, and wrote to me right afterwards and said, I don't know, I think there's more of a church connotation to indulgence. So we wrote back and forth a little bit with Halina Kruk and ended up coming up with this idea of redemption, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of redeeming the inevitable. But others have also translated this, and there's a wonderful translation that uses atonement as mm-hmm. well, not ours, but it's also a very good one.
Mm-hmm. So. And this is one of the poems that was written after the full-scale invasion in 2022. But the book also includes those poems that were written right after 2014. And Halina Kruk, during her international talks in particular, always specifies that the war began not in 2022, but in 2014. So how's collection constructed and how did you collect and arrange the poems? And if Halina Kruk also somehow, made some contribution to how the book should appear to Anglophone audiences.
Yeah. About a year ago, when we contacted Halina, she already compiled a collected volume that she called Book War. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, we could not play on this verbal pun. It's untranslatable. Book War means an ABC book. But in her rendering, the second half, War, became war. So it's like a book of war. Mm-hmm. And she already included poems from different time periods of the war, both more recent and from 2014. And I feel like we've taken this file very seriously, doing very little changes in the order in which she presented these poems.
We did change a few things, though. I mean, mostly we added, because she's been very prolific over the last year. So we go in reverse chronology in this particular volume, and we add a little bit of the early stuff. We have about two poems before the beginning of the Donbass War, one I think from 2012 and one from 2013. Mm-hmm. And so we added a little bit of earlier stuff that's come out in other books, but then we also added poems that she had written after conceptualizing this Ukrainian language book of war poems. And, you know, we had a certain point, Askold Melnichuk, who edits at Aerosmith, had to say, okay, you're done. No more poems beyond 2022. We have to get this out. So we have, I think our last poem is from December 2022 that mm-hmm. we managed to translate and slip in. And many of these are poems that she published on Facebook that have not come out in book form yet in the Ukrainian original, except of course in this one, which is bilingual. But it's very much a record of her experience of war and her heightening experience of war, since we have things from, you know, 2014 to the present. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, many poets, in fact, comment on their postings of poems on Facebook and then somehow compiling these poems into book collections, which are subsequently published. As literary scholars, would you somehow share your ideas about how this Facebook poem commentary somehow contributes to book production in the future? So do you have your kind of theoretical approach to this kind of writing, particularly during the wartime?
I mean, I've been studying Facebook poetry in Ukraine since about 2019. I started to notice that there was something really interesting that was happening in the comment threads on Facebook. And so I started to kind of create a quantitative study that used an archive of poems, and that allowed me to search and to sort of look at the changing themes in a kind of, I don't know, I don't want to call it big data, but medium data way. What I think is really, really useful about Facebook, and this is just the design of the platform, is that we have a record not only of the poems when they are written, but a record of the way that people respond to them, sometimes in real time. We can sometimes even see poets' responses to people's translations that happen right in the comment thread. And for the literary scholar, this is gold. I mean, this is so interesting and so useful for people studying contemporary writing, because it gives us a large set of things to study, even when it's just produced in a kind of short term, and even when it's not published yet formally. I think that the work that's coming out in books is fantastic, and I think it's been coming out, you know, at an amazing rate. But there's this opportunity right now to kind of think about the conversation that people are a part of. Mm-hmm. And Facebook has been really, it's just been really huge for Ukrainians, in part, obviously, because it was declared a terrorist organization by the Kremlin. So that makes it a more appealing platform than it would have otherwise been as an American corporate platform.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Yulia.
I also want to add that with the invention of ChatGPT, all these poems published on social media contribute to the feed of poetic style, and it's kind of a corpora of its own. I remember recently Halina Krug herself tried to generate a poem in her own style, and it was pretty readable, right? So you could identify.
It was a little rhymier than Halina really is.
Yes, exactly.
For that.
Yeah, ChatGPT is doing a great job in versification and slobotonic.
What are the poetic nuances of Halina Krug's poetry that you had to somehow decode for translation to deliver what was presented in Ukrainian? And would you read one of those poems that you would like to comment on in terms of translation specificities, as well as in terms of some poetic characteristics which are quite prominent for Halina Krug's style?
I mean, I'll say that it's for being in a translation partnership with Yulia is wonderful for me as a translator and also as a scholar of poetry, because we really kind of have a little like workshop going where we will sit down and we will talk about these poems very closely and read them at the level of syntax and the choices that they make, and maybe even weird errors that creep in sometimes, and try to sort out what to do with poems. And what are some of the harder ones that we've confronted, Yulia,
Mama Yama Ya.
Mama Yama Ya. Shall we read Mama Yama Ya? This one might be worth reading in Ukrainian first to give a sense of the tone and the sound, and then we can talk about what was difficult.
So just want to give kind of a preview of Galina's recent changes in her poetics and versification, that she insists that there is some kind of inner logic in how she constructs the poem, but it's not subordinate to any formal features of the verse, rhyme, or even a rhythm. And very often she uses verbal puns that are very difficult to translate into any target language. And in this particular poem that we're about to read, she plays with this, again, the very primitive first rhymes that children read in ABC books, like Mama, Mila, Ramu, that based on repetition of syllables. So she uses the same principle by repeating syllables. And as many of her poems, this one also has a rin composition. So it begins and ends with the same line or even idea or line, maybe slightly altered.
Julia, do you want to read this in the Ukrainian okay. just because this one has such a strong rhythm?
Мама, яма, я, де моє ім'я? Рама від вікна, хрестовина на. Бог на вилітий шов, душу підібрав. Хірургічний шов, болю автоклав. Тіла мовчазни, вихололи дім. Не знаходить в нім прихостку любов. Мама, яма, як бігти навздогін? Плакати навзрид, падати навзнак. Боже, я прийму всі твої шляхи, але їх не руш, але їх залиш. Тих усіх малих, що навчилися лиш кілька перших слів з материних уст, з материних рук. Мама, яма, сам, як йому тепер? Мама, яма, як?
Mama, I'm a pit. Where's my name? Window frame, crossbeam holding it. God flew out the wound, picking up the soul, sutures, surgical. Autoclave for pain, body's silent frame, house grown cold, love can't find in it, shelter or a cord. Mama, how, a pit, run till you catch up, cry aloud, sob, fallen on your back. God, I accept all your paths, but they can't be moved, but they must be left. All the little ones, only barely learned, their first words, from a mother's tongue, from a mother's hand, mama, pit, self. How is he now? Mama, pit, how? So for this one, obviously there's a very strong rhythm. And, you know, you might think of translation as translators have to rely on this concept of what's dominant in the original poem. That's a concept that Roman Jakobson wrote about. And, you know, the dominant is the thing that makes the poem, and you have to figure out what is going to be dominant for your readers. So you couldn't translate this poem without trying to get at least some of the rhythm, maybe not all of the rhyme. We found, I mean, this is, I have a very strong feeling about this as someone coming from an English language background, that you can't overdo rhyme in English or your readers won't trust you. And so we tried to hint at the rhyme without making it like too heavy-handed. But we also, one of the other things that we had to think about was, as Julia mentioned, double meanings, but also word order is much looser in the Ukrainian than it is in English. So a line like mama, yama, ya, or mama, yama, yak, that could be mama, I'm a pit, mama, pit, I, mama. There are different ways of understanding the word order in English. So because of her repetition, we were able to play a little bit with suggesting different possibilities for those lines.
Thank you. And Julia, would you like to add anything?
So very often her poems are deceptively simple, like this one, based on the repetition of syllables. But it just reveals the very deep pain of basically dismemberment, right? And then collecting the cell from scratch. So I feel like this poem just beautifully captures this movement from these fragments of identity and body parts into a new kind of wounded new one.
Yeah, and the very words.
Yeah, sorry, go on. She plays with words a lot, and I would say that maybe even a little more in some of her earlier work, because she's sort of forgoing some of her wordplay in the current work to really get the message across. But it's really beautiful translating with Yulia, because there are things that I just, like, as a non-native speaker of Ukrainian, I'm not going to catch. So there's another poem that we translated, a much earlier poem, where she has a line, Ya ostanya bukva zvetki. And I was like, I am the last letter. And Yulia's like, no, Ya is the last letter in the alphabet. Like, of course. But, you know, doing this with two heads is very useful, especially when one of the heads is thinking in the language in a much more immersed way than I'm able to. But she plays with this a lot. And in this other poem that I'm referencing now, we even decided to have fun with it. And the fact that it is facing pages, Ukrainian and English, meant that we were able to maybe be a little bit looser and more playful with some of our translations. So this one, we decided to bring Cyrillic into our translation and, you know, just write, I am Yah mm-hmm. in the Cyrillic last letter of the alphabet and so forth, so that you know, people will get it. And if they don't get it, they can go look it up. They can use Google Translate. There's all sorts of tools to help.
Yulia, do you have a poem that you would like to share?
Shall I read this in English first, and then Yulia, you can do it in the original? So, history of the turn of the century. Fatal and inconsistent as Nep, she aims her bangs at you. The poet's muscles are slack, like a millstone in 33. But don't give her a word, or she'll take them all. You've tried not to let her dazzle you. You've seen these tricks, won't fall for them. Who is she anyway? Flirt, Chakot agent, bitch. She knows how to hit you where it hurts. That what will kill you will seduce you first. Audacious ubermensch, how long will you stay standing over the hollowed trench after a hasty gunshot, over a bullet-marked body where God will never die?
Історія початку століття. Фатальна і непослідовна, як політика Непу, виставила проти себе тебе своє бойове каре. В холосту, наче жорна у 33-му, ходять жовна поета. Але жодного слова не давай їй, вона і так усе забере. Ти пробував навестися на всі її штучки-дрючки. Ти бачив різні колінця, цими тебе не візьмеш. Бо хто вона, вертихвістка, чекістка, сучка, знає, куди тебе бити, щоб найбільше боліло. А вже ж, а як на початку манила все те, що потім убила, зухвалості над людина, як довго встоїш на двох, над вивершеним окопом, над запострілом скороспіли, над простреленим тілом, якому таки ніколи не помирає Бог. I was attracted to this poem because of Сергій Жадан's 2001 The History of Ukrainian Labatonic. And I found parallels in developing this line of poetic tradition that was interrupted during 1930s, the period that now known in history as the Garotid Renaissance, when Ukrainian modernist poets and artists were arrested and assassinated in Sandarmov mostly. And contemporary generation of poets picking up this tradition and filling in the gaps. So very much they remain modernist in their understanding of poetry's impact on larger society and in the culture.
Emilia, would you like to comment on this poem?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say that we were in touch with Halia when we were first translating this. Actually, we'd already translated it, but we were getting ready to publish it. And she called our attention to things that we hadn't even kind of thought about. This Boyeve Kare in the second line, right? This she aims her bangs at you. Is there's both the, you know, she aims her ammunition at you, and it's the same word for like part of the haircut, right? The front of a person's hair, the fringe. And there was a kind of fortuitous double meaning in English mm-hmm. with the word bang as well. And so she's personifying this idea of time and of history as a kind of femme fatale who is dangerous.
So in terms of topics, what are the major topics in this collection and how are they developed? So there are a lot of biblical allusions and there are topics of faith, for instance, as well as dealing with a struggle of losing this faith in the face of witnessed atrocities inflicted by Russia on Ukraine.
I would not thematize the poems because her range of topics and material are very wide, but I would analyze it in terms of the function of poems that now it's not time of metaphors and beautiful poetry, it's time of praying, mm-hmm. Commemorating, lamenting the dead. So I feel like these poems function as the collective rituals mm-hmm. In time of war. Either consoling the wounded ones or, again, commemorating the dead ones. So poetry becomes like in prehistoric, pre-Christian times, a form of existence of people during the war.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very accurate that the range of topics which we can somehow identify in these poems is very, very wide. And as you put it very nicely, that it's probably more productive to think about these poems in terms of functions rather than in terms of individual topics. Emilia.
She's very capacious. I mean, she's an incredibly well-read person, an incredibly educated and cultured person, and she draws poems from everywhere. Obviously, you know, she's also a scholar of Baroque literature, mm-hmm. and you see that everywhere. She talks about, you know, she uses these historical references to Ukraine, but also to the classics outside Ukraine. There's also a lot of science that shows up. She has a certain scientific sensibility, geological formations of parts of Ukraine, anthracite and so forth will kind of appear. Physics, she's got a kind of, she's interested in physics as something that can pattern mm-hmm. our understanding of existence, points in time. She'll have these kind of mathematical constructs that will come into some of her poems. So each one, you know, she'll have this kind of seed of an idea that seems to come out. And, you know, it's very much, she's talked about the experience of losing electricity during much of 2022 and how that changed the way that she thought about her writing process. She was actually writing literally in the dark with a candle some of the time. And in fact, at one point wrote to me, we were sort of texting about things. And she said, it's sort of, I think it's been good in certain ways for my poems because it slows me down and it helps me think about the history of humans writing by candlelight, as hard as this is. So she's found metaphors even in an incredibly dark period.
Mm-hmm. But, and you commented on a couple of poems during our conversation. Did you have a chance to share them with your students, for instance, or with other audiences? And what kind of response did these poems receive?
We shared some with Julia's students just a couple of weeks ago. Do you want to talk about your students' responses to some of them?
My students actually posted the discussion comments after our reading. I'm just trying to find and summarize some of them. I mean, they were all very impressed with the depth of the poems mm-hmm. And how topical they are. One second, maybe I'll find.
I'll be sharing them with my students in a couple of weeks, but I'll say my students have read others' poems. We brought in Olga Lipshin, who's translated Khersonska, and they're very moved by the contemporary poetry. They're very interested in the fact of poetry becoming incredibly meaningful for a group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are impressed with the juxtaposition of peaceful imagery of flowers and rainbows against the violent imagery of the war. It was very difficult to process this. Mm-hmm. And also they were, for the first time they were reading through the poetry about the difficult realities of displacement. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be displaced internally and externally? So they actually read these poems as a commentary and kind of reporting on the devastating impact of the war.
Would you say that these poems or any other poems by other poets could be some sort of a window into Ukrainian culture with hundreds and hundreds of years of cultural and historical developments, or students just able to somehow sympathize more probably with the current struggles and and to probably better understand those crimes which are being committed by Russia and Ukraine right now? Or we can still use these poems to somehow push students to be interested in Ukrainian culture and as well as in the previous centuries and other events.
I think that's a really nice way of putting it. I mean, I think exactly what you're saying is what you're suggesting in your question is that these poems might do both. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that we simultaneously have poems that are very much of our moment. They're poems that are posted to a social media site that Americans also mm-hmm. sometimes mm-hmm. post things to. And so students can identify with that. But when you start to read the poetry of a culture, especially a culture going through war, you're also very aware of your your limits of understanding. You know, we as Americans are not going through the same thing. And I think that these poets make that very clear. And then when they delve deep into the history of Ukrainian culture, there's a demand that the reader try to go with them. They may not get to every place, but Paulina writes about Stus, a wonderful poet of the 60s. She writes about the history of Ukrainian Christians. She writes about the geography of Ukraine. She writes, of course, as you've just heard, about the Holodomor and about Nep and the Stalin years. And I think that reading enough of this poetry, and hopefully this book would do this for people, will give people a sense of where to go next in trying to learn about Ukraine. Mm-hmm.
I feel like all our writers and artists now feel themselves implicated in history, and in many of their works they bring the repressed pages of Ukrainian history, because every single family had some kind of experience with Bolshevism and terror. So it became now part of the reality because of the similarity of the experiences, of traumatic experiences they undergo. So they, through their contemporary works, they bring to the readers the forgotten pages of history. So in Helena Krukut's Great Terror, right, and Holodomor, but in other cases it could be also Holocaust and other more recent, like with Stus, right, repression of the political and creative dissent.
And Helena Krukut's poetry is looking for a language to articulate a number of traumatic experiences, as we previously pointed out, and one of them is finding an ability to articulate one's feelings under the pressure of ongoing ongoing fighting and ongoing witnessing of crimes that Russia commits against Ukraine. So what language are we looking for? And Yulia, as you write your current book right now, one of the parts of this book is about reconciliation, and probably you can somehow comment on this topic in contemporary Ukraine. But I'm also wondering whether we can talk about this language of not just reconciliation, but some sort of resistance, right? Resistance, resilience. And I'm not sure what part will be occupied by victimization in this language.
I don't know. I don't believe that language shapes reality, mm-hmm. especially at this moment. Just poetry is the most immediate medium to communicate trauma and mm-hmm. Unite community. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the Ukrainian society will recover from this traumatic experience. When I apply forgetting and reconciliation, of course, I talk about the previous traumas, mm-hmm. World War II, Holocaust, Holodomor. But this is not the time to forget. This is time to record, to testify, to collect witnesses for the future trials.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I mean, I can add to that by saying that there's another process that Ukraine is in the midst. I mean, it's defending itself against a war that's threatening its annihilation. I mean, mm-hmm. Ukrainians all, it's painfully clear that everyone needs to stop everything and do that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is a war of independence in the same way that America experienced a war of independence over 200 years ago. And I think in that process, Ukraine is re-envisioning what it means to be Ukrainian. This idea that, you know, and I think it the accusation that Ukrainians are somehow ethno-nationalists, which has come from the part of the Kremlin, has mobilized many on the vanguard of Ukrainian culture to prove that wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that's involved a process of thinking not just about specifically ethnic Ukrainian trauma, but the traumas of the various peoples living in Ukraine. And that's been the case for, you know, over a decade, but it's intensified since the period of the Maidan and since the beginning of the Donbass War, that there's been a lot more general discussion of the deportation of the Tatars, of the Holocaust, mm-hmm. of the struggles of various groups in Ukraine. And my hope is that those conversations will continue and that it won't become narrowed to mm-hmm. an ethno-national particularism. which is a risk, of course, of any war. And yeah. Ukrainians valiantly have resisted that.
Thank you. And I always think about these books in terms of how they could be integrated into literature courses. And as we know, unfortunately, we don't have that many literature courses on Ukrainian literature in the States, unfortunately, today. But hopefully we will see some increase of this course.
We are each teaching one right now.
Oh, wonderful. Well, would you share your experience of teaching these courses? Courses then, and how, for instance, this collection could be integrated in your future semesters of teaching this course?
I'm teaching a two-week course on Ukrainian culture. It's called Ukraine at the Crossroads. Mm-hmm. And we discuss this in-betweenness and hybridity of Ukrainian identity through different texts and epochs, starting with the Tale of Bygone Years and ending is Grey Bees by Andrei Kurkov. So I just like to bring contemporary writers. We are lucky to have Kurkov on campus, and Amelia lives in California. So students are very interested in contemporary processes in society and in culture. And for them, my Stanford students come mostly from engineering and science background. So for them, taking a literature course, it's just, you know, to discover who they are, to share their ideas, because our courses are relatively small. I have a group of 12 students compared to, for example, courses on math or physics, where they barely know their peer students. So I feel like we can definitely use more contemporary literature, even in translation, and develop this habit reading the literature and translation that, unlike in Europe, is not very popular here.
Yeah, my course is similar, but it's maybe a little bit broader historically. It's called The Literatures of Ukraine, mm-hmm. and it starts with Kotlyarevsky and ends with, my last week I'll be doing contemporary poetry. So not the entire book, but I'll be doing some selected poems from this as well as some others. Mm-hmm. And we cover literatures written in different languages in Ukraine, from, you know, Sholem Aleichem to Bruno Schultz to obviously Gogol and Babil and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's a course that also shows the hybridity of the space of Ukraine. And I do think that the book works well as a, It reads as a clear statement, even though it's a book of around 60 poems. It you know, it could be read as a kind of experience of war in Ukraine. I also could imagine this being used in a course that that introduced students to the study of Ukrainian literature in Ukrainian, because it's bilingual. Mm-hmm. So it leaves open that possibility of people being able to look at the original. So I'm hoping that some colleagues will adopt the book, or at least use sections of it to introduce this really wonderful poet to students.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that this book will become some sort of a part of a literary course or some translation course as well. But maybe it can also be included in some interdisciplinary courses, like Yulia has mentioned, Ukraine at Crossroads, and it can be history and literature. And I think it really offers a very rich material for the exploration of Ukraine and Ukrainians' culture and history. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Amelia and Yulia, for this conversation. And of course, thank you for bringing Halina Kruk's poetry to Anglophone audiences. And I do hope that you will translate more of Halina Kruk's poetry, because I saw that she already posted a lot of new recent poems on Facebook. So maybe in the near future, we'll see a new translation by you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today I spoke with Amelia Glaser and Yulia Ilchuk about Halina Kruk's book, A Crash Course and in Molotov Cocktails, published by Arrowsmith this spring. Thank you so much for listening to Ukrainian Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network.